Oh yeah, feel the rhythm in your seat. Get out onto your feet. It's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. Squarespace! They're the guys that made that possible, getting that show out to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff, two N's, one Tanada, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who celebrates Star Wars Day and Cinco de Mayo in one massive two-day party, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, Jeff. Two things up top. One, this is our first show before Mother's Day, so I want to give a shout-out to my mom and my wonderful mother. Wife, also a, you know, the mother of my baby, always supportive of gaming, and also to do that to remind our listeners that in the U.S., Mother's Day is this Sunday, so just file that away somewhere. And then on a serious but maybe sadder note, a friend of a friend of mine and known within the comedy community killed herself last month. And just that is just a reminder that if you are feeling sad or alone or depressed, talk to someone, reach out, call a suicide prevention hotline. And if you think one of your friends feels that way, reach out to them. You only have one chance to help save a life, and it's important. And take care of yourself and video games.
Wow. Okay, well, I was going to do a whole riff on Cinco de Mayo because it's Cinco de Mayo today, and it was Star Wars Day yesterday, but that's a sobering reminder. And
well, it's important. It's not meant to be depressing, but it's important, and unfortunately, it takes tragedy to remind us of it. You know, we can still have fun and enjoy Cinco de Mayo, and I'm looking forward to Indiana Jones June 2nd is, you know, my favorite Lucas holiday, but take care of yourselves.
Yeah, no, that's important to note. So I guess I shouldn't talk about Corona lightsabers and margarita Falcons.
And I kind of want to know how many you have now. Go down. How many more alcohol
Boba Fett Hitas?
Okay.
No? Okay. Anyway, DLC, you know, it's your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, DLC stands for Discussing Legacies with Carlos. Because we've got the one guy I know who has the same old favorite computer game I have, Ultima 7. Video Game Breaks Show's own Carlos Rodella. Welcome to the show, Carlos.
Thank you for having me. And I will only mention Ultima one or two times on this podcast.
It's a requirement. It's the biggest reason that you're here.
Well, I don't know if I like that. But I'll also say for our younger listeners, Ultima was a series of role-playing games culminating in one of the greatest ones ever that you just mentioned, Ultima 7. So do some Googling research and see what you've missed. It's also on goodoldgames.com.
Yeah, so Carlos, did you just already mention it twice in the first 15 seconds? You're done?
Yes. Yeah. So now we're done for the whole show.
Well, Shroud of the Avatar, you know, is the spiritual successor, which was this big Kickstarter success and is coming out supposedly by the end of this year. It's going to be an MMO by Richard Garriott, old Lord British himself. It has some of the same locales as the Ultima series. It's got New Britannia. It's got the Avatar. It sounds really cool, actually.
And I'm probably going to be talking to him about that on my podcast, which I'm really excited about. Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome. He's an interesting cat. He did he go to space or did he just want to go to space?
I think he went to space.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, he's just an astronaut or something now.
He's just an astronaut. Well, he's also making this game. And there's a big write-up in the New Game Informer about it. I was really interested to read some of the really cool concepts that they're talking about with that game as far as deciding what level of MMO-ness you want, which is, I think, this new trend that's happening more and more. They're talking about you can have a single-player experience. You can have an MMO that only involves your friends. So whoever is on your friends list is populating your MMO world, or you can have the regular MMO experience where any old random person is wandering around the same world as you. I think that's a really cool concept for that game. I'm excited about Shroud of the Avatar.
The one that's just with your friends might be an LONELYO.
Speaking for yourself, I guess, but,
No, I've been following it, and it seems like they're really, you know, he's listening to the community a lot, you know, and that's why they did the Kickstarter and stuff like that. I feel like they understood how it worked. I mean, Ultima Online was one of the first ones to do a lot of
first MMOs. Mechanics. Yeah.
You know,
it was back in the day, man.
You're coming from good history, so I feel like he's going to do it really well.
See, I knew we'd be discussing legacies, but we also need to discuss all the happenings that happened right now, which is why we start the show with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important story that happened in the world of gaming. This week, boy, lots of stuff. Leaks galore, news items, hirings, firings. Carlos, I'm interested. What is your story of the week?
Well, I don't want to pull a Jeff and have four or five of them, but I do. I'll start with the. I'm not throwing you to the bus. I'm the same as you. I have so many. I'm going to go with. It's an interesting one. I'm going to go with Nintendo President Satoru Iwata talking about. He recently said, we need to redefine what Nintendo must do, which I think was a pretty huge kind of statement to make. And obviously with the problems with the Wii U sales and other issues with, you know, what are they going to do in the hardware space? I just thought it was interesting. He went on to say that basically the former president, Yamauchi, basically talked about entertainment being not just video games, but also like what improves one's quality of life. So I wonder how he's going to take that information. And he said he wanted to carry out his wishes in this fashion. So does this mean Wii Fit Plus? Does this mean Nintendo Fitbits? Like what do you think it means for, you know, quality of life covers a lot.
Yeah, this is something they've been talking about for a while now, about really redefining the company as a real lifestyle and fitness company. And I don't think that that's going to see any fewer Mario titles or fewer Zelda titles. I do, however, think that they are not interested in going toe-to-toe with Sony and Microsoft. They are, I think, learning from the last generation where they have this opportunity to carve out an entirely unique section of a market that is untapped. I think that between brain training games and Wii Fit games, they made a lot of money last generation. And I think their headspace is why, you know, fight over the hardcore when we can't seem to get third parties that make those hardcore games to be on our systems anyway. Why not decide that we're going to make games that cater to an entirely different audience, people that don't traditionally consider themselves gamers, people that want an interactive experience that can enrich their lives in different ways. Now, we can argue about the merits of that from our hardcore gamer mentality, but from a business strategy, I think it's an interesting tact. I don't think it's what I would want from Nintendo, but it's certainly proved to be successful last generation. So it seems like that's what they're going for.
I'm just wondering what, like, you know, when he says like redefine what Nintendo must do, I remember them talking about lifestyle, and they've obviously done Wii Fit for a while and those types of things. There was that heart monitor at some point, but I just wonder if it means like literally going in with other manufacturers or doing some sort of, you know, hardware that isn't necessarily game hardware, you know?
I don't want that either. Heart rate monitor and the Wii Fit board are examples of them already venturing out into that space. And I would not be surprised if we see more of that.
I mean, it's one of the things where Nintendo has, you know, from a card game, you know, manufacturer to Game & Watch to a console juggernaut, it's something that they've done before. But I also feel like this is potentially a sector where, you know, if this is more ripe for a new young startup to enter, and I'm talking about, or maybe not even a new young startup, I mean, Samsung and Apple are trying to get into it. But if this is more of that like Silicon Valley tech field for this, you know, lifestyle tech, health, fitness versus Nintendo, I think it'd be great if there's more competition even in that space. I'm just not sure how well suited Nintendo is to tackle it with, you know, their history, or maybe that's what they're gearing up for and they're revamping all of these products. I don't know, but that's my concern of them entering that space.
Well, you know, another thing that happened this week is that Nintendo announced yet again that they will not be having a traditional E3 press conference. I think that all of these are signs that they're just kind of not willing to play the same game everybody is anymore. They want to preach to their converted, and they want to convert those that aren't already converted by Sony and Microsoft. I think that they are, you know, they're really trying to carve out a different game than everybody else.
But Jeff, it just hurts though, because I was there with you at E3 last year, and for that debacle, that mini kind of mini whatever they did.
Play the games. Gesundheit.
And I'm just over the, I don't know, being someone who comes from that world of, you know, Nintendo was such a special moment for a lot of us, especially us older folk. And to see the kind of, I don't want to say disregard, but it just felt really weird last year. And now if they're going to even take that less, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. We were standing there and it felt like, well, why are we even here? This is ridiculous. But I think that's the point, is that it's not for us anymore. They want to sidestep the press or the game journalist folk, such as we are. And they want to talk directly to their customers. And I think that's where we're headed, unfortunately, for us, with a lot of these companies who have no interest in having an intermediary between what they are saying and what the audience is hearing. They don't want it to be filtered through opinion, which is what we are doing. They want to say, hey, in the era of Twitch, in the era of people watching live streams, in the era of easily deliverable internet content, we can just show gamers exactly what they want to see. We can talk directly to them. Why even have a press conference? We don't need the press. The press is superfluous to us. We can just show them and talk directly to them. And you don't. It's really interesting. It's really interesting to see what the future of E3 will be when more and more of these companies can do that.
Well, I think.
Go ahead.
What you've changed. What's changed over time because of that, and I agree with what you said, Jeff, is we still call them press conferences or the more annoying pressers, but what they really are is a pep rally now, where they're broadcast live out to people on the internet, and it's like before homecoming in high school or college, and you know the cheerleaders run on the field and the football team comes out and everybody gets hyped up and you leave feeling like this is gonna be the best, and you get pumped up for these games and these systems. And I think a killer live show, even a live show that is then broadcast, can do that better than just a pre-recorded, even Apple, have live stage shows and then they intercut with their videos of, John Ives or Ivy, however you say his name, sitting in with the white backdrop sitting there going like, what I like about technology, but they still do that, like get hype up the base, and then they go spread the gospel. And I think that's what these big events are, not what they used to be, where, hey, press, here's the information. Now you go give that to your people.
Obviously, as we say every week, DLC is a show that's decided by listener contribution, and people can submit stories of the week using the hashtag DLCSOTW all week long. This particular story was submitted by @BrandMartin06, and I just wanted to reiterate the gist of it for people because I think it's kind of exciting. I think if you're not going to E3, if you're not one of those people that's going to E3, I think it's really awesome that Nintendo is going to be streaming the exact same thing the press is going to see to you. I think that people like that. And what's going to happen is that they're going to have this digital event, which is basically another one of their Nintendo Directs. And it will air at 9 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, June 10th. And they will be basically showing off all their new stuff like they would at a press conference, except anybody can tune in. And they're also doing a Super Smash Brothers Invitational Tournament at the Nokia Theater during the E3 week. So that really kind of democratizes E3 as well, because it's going to be for non-press. It's going to be for average gamers to participate in. And you can even participate in it at Best Buy locations, which is kind of interesting. I think from our perspective, it's kind of like, oh, wow, they're not playing that game. But from an average gamer's perspective, it's kind of cool, I would guess.
Well, I want to say something about what Christian said, because I think he's right on when it comes to pep rally, getting people excited. Because when I mentioned when we were there at E3, I wasn't even thinking as like a press person. I don't even, if you even think of myself as that most of the time. I'm just a really big fan of games. And so I felt let down as a fan kind of in that way. And then also I really am interested to see how many people actually do watch those directs. I mean, every time one comes up, I always feel like I miss it. Like, oh, there was a Nintendo Direct. I have to go back and watch it. So I just don't know. I would like to see the numbers on those to see if people are actually watching those things. But I definitely think that getting people pumped and getting people excited, especially in a time where people are pretty down about the Wii U and about some of the promises and ideas that we thought Nintendo might be this generation, I think it's kind of important.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I would guess that they'll have a much higher viewership for the E3 week Nintendo Direct than they would any other time. But yeah, it's very interesting. Christian, what have you got for a story of the week contender?
That's tied, and the bigger story is how things are handled. My story is about big games possibly being leaked or being leaked, and the big games, you know, this past week that were leaked were Call of Duty Advanced Warfighter, which was leaked and then confirmed, and then Project Beast from Software. For all, it leaked and looks very legit, but not confirmed. And I wonder if Sony is kind of like, well, crap, like that was a big flag for their E3 press conference. I mean, that's a pretty big get if that from Project Beast is a, you know, PlayStation exclusive. The screenshots and stuff look pretty awesome. And so they haven't confirmed it, whereas, you know, the Call of Duty leak came out a little before Activision was ready to announce it, and then they went ahead and just announced it. And I think, you know, there's always been leaks in this industry for years now, but it's, I always think it's interesting how they're handled, you know, where they come from, what are leaks, what are controlled leaks, and then what are, you know, or Assassin's Creed Unity, I guess, was the last big example where that came out. And then I think, you know, props to Ubisoft for just kind of saying, okay, well, here we go. And they whipped together a trailer and they got ahead of, you know, the rumor mill, and a leak can sometimes destroy a project versus if you grab it by the horns and say, well, we got to work with what we have now.
Yeah, obviously the Call of Duty Advanced Warfighter, we should talk about the trailer in and of itself, but let's since you framed it as a leak story, which it is, let's talk a little bit about leaks, because as you said, they've been happening for a long time, and I would guess that a real majority of them happen because of the advance, you know, going to press times of Advanced Warfighter, the advance going to press times of magazines. So you have to, you know, they have to have the information, a magazine has to have the information far sooner than a website has to have the information. And oftentimes these magazine, you know, lead times lead to people having to sit on information for a long time and it disseminating and leaking out. I don't know if that's the case here, but it's interesting to me as I think magazines phase out in our culture. I wonder if there'll be fewer of these, or if it's just a part of the fact that people have cool information and they want, and the internet's there and they can get it out. And if you know it, then get it out.
Hey, Jeff, that just happened with GamePro. The German version of GamePro released the review of Mario Kart 8. Yeah. And they did it early before embargo. And I guess it was kind of okay because it was a magazine. I'm still confused on the story, but that's what I heard.
I had a little tiny insight into this when I was at PAX East. I was a guest of the Firaxis team, and they invited me to moderate their panel. And at their panel, they were going to reveal Beyond Earth, right? Well, they had done a bunch of pre-interviews with a lot of magazines so that as soon as the announcement happened at the panel, all these stories could go live on the internet and in magazines. Well, again, it was some sort of overseas group that didn't care or didn't understand or whatever, and they leaked it early, and the entire team was really upset and hurt and didn't know how to handle it. And I think these things happen a lot. It was interesting for me to just to see it because I happened to be hanging around those guys at that time. I think this happens more often than it doesn't happen. And we've seen E3's past where all this stuff comes out ahead of time, and then people complain, oh my God, there were no big surprises at E3. It's like, well, yeah, because all the big surprises happened in the weeks leading up to it. And, you know, all these companies tried really hard to give you surprises, but everybody leaked them. So you can't have it both ways, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the traditional media and magazine, you know, of course, that's of longer lead time, so it does make leaks more possible. But I also think that what you're saying, Jeff, is a big factor in it is the way technology and the way information is spread now. Because, yeah, you know, magazines need to get this stuff out early, but the company that cut the trailer together or that created the box art, you know, likely wasn't in-house at Ubisoft, or, you know, the person who did the voiceover, where was it, Kevin Conroy, you know, 4 years ago, they're like, so how do you feel about not doing the new Batman Arkham game? He's like, oh no, I'm in the studio right now doing it. I mean, the games themselves take a long time to make, and the assets that go with them take a long time. And I feel like now one of the biggest sources of leaks on the internet is LinkedIn. Like, people crap on LinkedIn as a social network or whatever, but, you know, it's like, oh, so-and-so is not working at, I'm just making something up, they're not working at Bungie anymore, but they just posted a screenshot that looks an awful lot like a Templar from Assassin's Creed. You know, the information just spreads, and it's so easy to do, and also anonymously now, whereas before it was Quarterman, you know, at EGM or like GamePro, and now you can set up a Twitter account, you know, at a public library if you're really that worried about it, and tweet out, Assassin's Creed 17 coming, you know, February 2023.
Well, let me ask you this.
You heard it here first.
Did.
Are you guys, as fans, are you more excited when something leaks or when it's announced in a controlled PR blast? What's more fun?
I was asking the chat room that same question, because I often wonder. I mean, I know from the journalistic side of things, you know, getting ahead, like having one company want to have like the edge and we got the exclusive, and that's important to them. But to fans, I feel like they just want to know the information and they don't care how they really get it, right? They just want it first and as soon as they can.
I guess. I mean, I see Toki Not a Bumblebee in the chat room says he loves leaks. It adds some intangible excitement to the story. I guess there is that illicit nature of getting information you're not supposed to have that makes it even more titillating and more exciting. I don't know. Sometimes there is a joy to looking at blurry screenshots and going, ooh, what is that? Is it real? Is it not real?
That was so me back in the day when it came to, like, you know, Nintendo or something, getting like a Japanese magazine and seeing some weird screenshot with like hiragana, katakana, and going like, what is that really coming here?
Blurry screenshots are today's scrambled cable channels.
Yeah. I miss scrambled cable.
That's a whole other topic, by the way, and we probably shouldn't go into it.
Yeah, for the after show. A well-done press, like controlled press release, I think is awesome and can be exciting. The problem is that oftentimes they're drawn out and they don't give you what you want, or they seem boring. Like, I think, as much as I'm not a huge fan of the actual games, I think Rockstar and Grand Theft Auto, what they do with their how they release information is stellar, and it gets people hyped, and it has the, you know, the aura of the excitement of what a leak can have, but it's all official. But something, you know, like the Bungie preview event that just happened, they showed a lot of stuff, but I think it left a lot of people, you know, as we talked about last week, Jeff, feeling underwhelmed because they didn't get into any of the stuff that people wanted to know about. So it's like,
if it was a leak, then it would have been like, any information is good information because we weren't supposed to have it.
Exactly. I think that there's truth to that. And I think companies can do it when they do it well, but it's that fine line between, like, I think it was Bungie that did, was it Save the Bees or, you know, whatever their kind of viral,
right.
And it was all official. And it's that fine line between not being too annoying and like just tickling someone's foot with a feather and driving them crazy versus
I Heart Bees, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, getting that information out there in a cool way. And it's interesting. I want it to be cool. I don't care how I get it.
Let's talk about the cool info then. Carlos, what did you think of the Call of Duty Advanced Warfighter trailer? We got Kevin Spacey in a big role. We've got future stuff. We got hover bikes. We got exoskeletons. We got a release date, November 4th, 2014. What do you think, man?
I just want to know, is Kevin Spacey an unlockable, playable character? That's all I want to know.
Well, clearly the game takes place in the Francis Underwood administration.
Yeah, totally. I think that I would be really exciting if he was a character. He, like, his skills would be coercion and, and like smooth talk skill. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a Call of Duty guy, so I'm going to lose a lot of fans in the chat with that. But I've never been that military shooter guy. And for some reason, by the way, in that trailer, you see all the air drones. People really think those are the future.
Well, they're the present. I mean, we're using them daily in this country.
It is the
right?
present, but I mean, it feels like they were like attacking or something, or shooting missiles. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is Call of Duty. I haven't cared about it for a while. I know people who actually love Call of Duty who have stopped caring about it. So the futuristic stuff is cool, though. And I like Kevin Spacey. I don't know if that'll do it, though.
Christian, what's your take? Call of Duty.
I think that they create great trailers. What I think is interesting about this trailer is if you know you're on NeoGAF or you follow the Twitter, if you're in the scene, it's always funny that when a new Call of Duty comes out, people often react with like, back in. Exoskeletons, back in. This is going to be the one that brings me back in. And then like November 3rd, before the game comes out, people will be like, sucks, hate it, over it, more corridors. Like,
well, what do you think instead of what the people think?
Here's what I think. I think
instead of getting lost in the echo chamber, let's.
I think it's a great, effective trailer. I think it's naive to think that this game will be anything dramatically different than other Call of Duties. The exoskeleton looks cool, but so did the glider suit in Ghosts. I don't think you'll be running around the whole game with the exoskeleton suit. I think you'll get it for that one level on the bridge. And for most of the game, you'll be in corridors with scripted pop-out pockets. I think it will be enjoyable but forgettable single player, and the multiplayer will continue to iterate in a way that is effective for people that like those games. Ultimately, I think it'll be a forgettable game in a franchise that's going downhill.
Plus, the trailer, I mean, trailers always do that. They get you hyped. Dead Island, you know what I mean? Like, I think
aren't
that this
we
trailer
a cynical lot? Everybody's no. so cynical about
no.
I'm actually wicked optimistic, but this is just like, I think it's just like he said, it's going to be another Call of Duty. I think the trailer was really cool, and everybody knows that we all love Kevin Spacey right now because of House of Cards, which is brilliant. But yeah, I think it's like smoke and mirrors.
And it's not cynical. I think it's hard for a franchise to stay fresh and amazing year after year on a yearly cycle, even when there are three studios alternating taking turns with them. I mean, it's called Call of Duty.
Isn't this supposed
to stick to some formula. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. This as bold a move as they could take? This is pretty darn different from what Call of Duty has been.
How?
This is Crisis. This is them doing Crisis, right?
No, they added an exoskeleton for one shot in a trailer. They've had wingsuits before. They've had you controlling aerial drones before. They've had, I mean, and I could be wrong, and I'll gladly admit that I am, but from what we've seen, this shows nothing different than any other Call of Duty. Bombastic action sequences, a couple of really cool events. I mean, remember the AC-10?
Bombastic action sequences in a video game trailer? That's crazy.
Call of Duty 4, you know, they showed, I don't know, planes, but, you know, the AC-10 or whatever, how cool that was. And it's like, this changes everything. No, you did it for 20 minutes, and it was awesome. But it's not, they didn't come out and say, Titanfall. You know, Titanfall, while being a first-person shooter, changed things, because that was the conceit of the game. This is Call of Duty. It's not going to do that.
All right.
No. What do you think, though? What do you think? Don't play devil's advocate to what I think. What do you think? What did
I'm
you get away from this
I'm definitely more
trailer?
Optimistic than you are. I think this is... If we're going to get a yearly Call of Duty, right? I'd rather have a Call of Duty that pushes the envelope and goes somewhere interesting and looks like they're really doubling down on going somewhere place new. The idea that the game takes place in the future, that's awesome to me. The idea that I get to use hover bikes if I'm signing up for, I think you're having an indictment on the franchise rather than on this particular iteration, and that's fine. Like, if you're over the franchise, if what you want out of video games isn't shooting stuff in a big action game, then you're not going to want any of these kinds of games, right?
Yeah, but that being said, though, Jeff, real quick, is like, I love shooting things, and like Christian said, yeah, Titanfall's fun, and I love Half-Life and all that stuff. I like different settings. But the problem is I do not want to be a military guy anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like the idea of like what we do with other countries and all that stuff, that it's just not exciting to me. So
well, then there's nothing they could have announced. There's no Call of Duty game they could have announced because that's what the title is.
Here's what I want to see.
It's a military shooter.
Here's what I want to see. They show a cool action sequence and then they give me those bullet points and they say there aren't monster closets. There aren't tripwires that have maybe one or two scripted events, but what was that mode in someone in the chat, someone listening knows what I'm talking about. And that was cool. Like, I think that mode failed to live up to its potential, but that was trying to do something different. And what I think Call of Duty could do, I love the action. I love the control. I love the preciseness of Call of Duty. But what I don't love is, you know, it's a shooting gallery. It becomes rote. And I think that they can evolve that style of gameplay while still having awesome action moments, but have dynamic enemy artificial intelligence by having...
Well, there's nothing in that trailer that says that doesn't have that. I'm not saying that it does have that either, but I'm just saying it's a cynical view to say, well, based on this trailer, I know that it doesn't have any of that stuff.
And it's Strikeforce, not Overwatch, but Overwatch is a cool name. So someone that's probably used for like a million video games already too.
I think the only Call of Duty based announcement that you guys would have been excited about is them going, no Call of Duty this year. But that wasn't going to happen. And I think as far as Call of Duty announcements go, this is as outside of the box, as forward thinking, and as different as you were going to get. And for that, I think it's pretty darn cool.
You're painting me into a cynic's corner, and I don't appreciate it. And you are full of crap because this trailer is just like every other trailer where they show a little something new and it gets people hype, and that's great. But to sit here and you say that this gets you excited over Call of Duty, whereas Ghosts didn't or Black Ops 2 didn't, you're lying to yourself. You're either lying then or you're lying now.
There is more new here than there has been in the last three Call of Duty trailers put together. There is more different. There is more, I think, exciting for a guy that digs sci-fi, for a guy that wants to ride hover bikes, for a guy that, you know, I'm more excited in what I saw here than I have been in the last three Call of Duties put together. That's what I'll say.
Well, I love you, and I'm giving you a hug over the internet.
Hey, I was in that cynic's corner with you, too. You put me there.
All right.
No one's talking to you.
all right, guys. Let's take a break real quick and thank our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. That means any use you might have for a website, for an online destination, Squarespace is the place to go to make it happen. It is something I use every single day. I have jeffcanada.com housed on Squarespace, created on Squarespace, designed on Squarespace, and I love it. It makes it easy to update my website with new content. I can do that using their web app or their web interface or their mobile apps, which they have on iOS and Android. It's beautiful. The websites don't look like every other website you've ever seen. Design is super easy. It's all WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. It's all drag and drop design. Just bring stuff over, resize it right there in the window. You don't have to worry about coding. You can just make an awesome, unique, interesting website or portfolio or online destination yourself. Plus, they've got 24/7 support through live chat and email, which makes it easy to have any of your questions answered. I've used it myself. Those guys are really cool, very responsive, really quick, and it's inexpensive. Plans start at just $8 a month, which includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And you can have a free trial that is free with no credit card required. There's a lot of these places that are like, it's a free trial. Just use your credit card to sign up and we'll automatically charge you if you don't cancel it. No, not Squarespace. Squarespace requires no credit card to try it. You can build your website right there on their site. Check it out. See if you like what it is before you commit to anything, which I really, really like. Then if you do want to use it, you can go to squarespace.com/DLC, use our promo code VITA, V-I-T-A. Remember, it's Christian's favorite console, the Vita.
What?
And you get 10% off your first purchase. So show some support for DLC. I'm not asking you to buy anything. All I'm asking you to do is check them out. Go to squarespace.com/DLC. Start making your website. See all the cool stuff that you can do with their service. I love these guys, and I'm so glad they support our show, and I hope you support them. DLC, excuse me, squarespace.com/DLC with that promo code VITA.
Hey, Jeff, my site is actually with Squarespace, and I still use them to this day. I got it like 5-6 years ago. I love them.
Great, right? They're amazing.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that has started using Squarespace that doesn't love them, so... Honestly. Moving on. The other
what's
big
your story of the week, dude. What's your story of the week?
Well, I wanted to talk about the other one that you brought up, which was Project Beast from Software. Now that I'm a full on Dark Souls convert, I'm really jazzed about this. This one, as you mentioned, a lot less official because no confirmation. But the screenshots look pretty compelling. There's a bunch of them that were posted on 4chan originally and then brought over to NeoGAF and stuff. Looks like a very similar type of game from the other FromSoft Demon Souls, Dark Souls type games. But key difference, the character's wielding a shotgun, which I think kind of implies a more modern setting, or at least slightly more modern. Lots of cool beasties in the blurry screenshots that we've already referenced. And the original name for Dark Souls was Project Dark. So
if you wiggle a key in the back of a magazine, though, the screenshots get clear.
Oh, nice.
And if your parents aren't home and your friend comes over that lives down the street, Mikey, he has a magazine with all the clear pictures in it.
Good old Mikey.
So what do you guys think of these? Fake, real, cool, exciting, what?
Well, I'm going to jump out of Cynic's corner before you put me in there. I think they're real, and I think they look cool. I think it's exciting to see From Software. I'm such a hypocrite doing something new. My happy shotguns.
Listen, I don't put you in corners. You put yourself there.
Oh, I'm an idiot. That's how I feel. I think it looks cool. I really do. God, I'm sorry, Call of Duty fans. I'm sorry.
Carlos, are you a Dark Souls guy?
I'm not, and I was just gonna get out of the Cynic's corner. So let's not talk about Dark Souls, because then I'll be just that guy, angry old man again.
Do you think this game is real?
I think this game is real, actually. Yeah, I have a feeling that it is. But I played both of them, Dark Souls 1 and 2. Not Demon Souls, Dark Souls 1 and 2. And I tried so hard, Jeff, when I went back to 2. I went back to the world of it, and I won't talk about it. It'll just go too long.
Okay.
I shouldn't talk about it, or should I?
Well, if you want, you can talk about it.
Well, just my biggest thing is, we just talked about this on another podcast, but I just think that the playability, I want it to be a little bit better. Like, you can make a game that's difficult for the sake of being difficult, and that's fun. I mean, it's nostalgic, actually, because when we played Nintendo games, they were really, really hard. But I just feel like the controls I've never enjoyed. You know, they feel very arcadey or Konami-ish, and it doesn't do the things that I want to do. I mean, similarly, like Dragon's Dogma, which I think is a great game, people don't even check out or haven't bought much. That the playability, you can jump and tumble and grab onto enemies and fight them while you're still hit them while they're still moving around, like kind of like Ico or something, or Shadow Colossus. I just think that. It being difficult because of the controls makes me not want to play it. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a fair opinion. It's really not a game for everybody. I'm definitely excited about this Project Beast or Beast Souls. I hope it's not called Beast Souls, but the idea of taking that formula and moving it into a slightly different milieu, you know, adding different types of weapons. It's not so medieval-y. I think mm-hmm. could be really, really cool. And the idea of, I've been loving Dark Souls 2 so much on the PC because it's so pretty. And the idea that this might be the next gen version, a real new new engine or at least a graphical upgrade from what Dark Souls has been on consoles before has me really excited too. So I'm hoping this is real. I'm hoping we see lots more of it at E3. And I'm one of those guys that went cross-eyed looking at the blurry screenshots because I was so excited. So
this episode should be called Blurry Screenshots.
I think it might very well be. All right, but I should mention that story was also submitted by a listener using that hashtag DLCSOTW. It was by @BradGrenz. As are several other stories. I have to say, though, my favorite story this week may not be the biggest. The biggest is probably Call of Duty, but my favorite story this week was that there has been a new trademark filed for No One Lives Forever, a series of games that are near and dear to my heart, some of my favorite first-person shooters ever. And we might get re-releases of these on Steam or some other GOG, perhaps some other service, which is great because at this point you cannot get these games anywhere. And evidently on April 26th, a company called Night Dive Studios filed a trademark with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for all the No One Lives Forever games. The Operative, A Spy Who In Harm's Way, and No One Lives Forever, Contract Jack. They are this is a company, Night Dive Studios, that it has a history of releasing games, bringing games to Steam that weren't previously. System Shock 2 and The Seventh Guest are examples. So I'm hoping that people get a chance to play these games that haven't before. And I'm hoping, really hoping, it opens the door for a revitalization of that IP. These were really wonderful FPS games that had a sense of humor, which is not too common in those types of games. But it was great. They were games that were basically James Bond episodes with this female protagonist named Kate Archer. And they were really funny and fun and inventive. And I mean, one of them, I think the second or third game had a level that took place during a tornado in a trailer park. It was just wildly inventive and interesting games.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to just be a re-release or do you think we'll see something? It's weird that I'm almost excited for getting these games again because they're not playable than I am about a remake. Because I'm scared of a remake because they were almost perfect.
Yeah. Well, I think that it seems like this company is a company that basically just facilitates re-releases of old games. So it doesn't seem to be the case that they're going to create a new game. But if, you know, it's the kind of thing where if it comes out, if a lot of people show interest on Steam, it's not, you know, beyond the realm of possibility. With the world of Kickstarter and the world of, you know, revitalizing all these old IPs, it seems like it could really be the case that that could happen, which I'm for. I get your worry there. You know, that sometimes these things, you know, you see the Duke Nukems of the world or whatever, that it's like, it should have stayed dead. But I don't know. I think someone could really knock this game out of the park. It's such a wonderful concept. And as long as they stay true to that spirit, it could be a really fun game. And just playing the old games in and of themselves would be worthwhile.
Yeah, I love the idea of a new generation getting to play some, you know, games that we grew up with or they might not, you know exist. Obviously, Good Old Games does a great job of that. But I never played these ones particularly, but it sounds awesome. And I think that getting, you know, new eyeballs is a good thing.
Jeff, may I ask you a question?
Yes,
and it
may.
Slightly changes the subject, so I apologize, but it just popped back into my mind because it was a story of the week of yours before and a proud prediction of yours. Did you see the thing about how Microsoft is allegedly in negotiations with Showtime for the Halo series and how it will come to Showtime first before hitting Xbox Live TV or whatever they call it? Have you seen that rumor at all?
Yeah, I have, which is, it's really interesting. I didn't read the full article, though. Is there something specific that you wanted to reference, or just the fact that it could be a major network collaborating?
What I think, so the article didn't really, the one I read, I think, was on Variety. It didn't say much more than that. But what I think is interesting about it is Microsoft, to me, I feel like that's Microsoft saying that they don't really believe in their own system. To have a big of property, not their system, like not the Xbox One, but as a video distribution platform, to have like what could be a flagship show go to TV first. Wow. I mean, that's kind of crazy to me. It's not the same as Halo 5 is going to come out on PS4 first, but it's kind of like, don't you want to drive people to watch on your thing and now you're going to sell it to Showtime.
Yeah, it doesn't show a lot of confidence in the business model, does it? It makes it seem like, well, this is going to be a really expensive show for us to make, and we want to make sure that we recoup our money. So we don't know if we can do that just by putting it out over Xbox Live, which sort of undermines their entire strategy.
Right.
Yeah, it was actually one of my backup stories, Christian, is the Halo series going to Showtime first, because that same thing, like, you know, it's almost like they wisened up and they're like, we really want people to see this. And we don't know if everybody's going to be watching video on our platform. So where's the place they'll actually see it? And it goes hand in hand with the other content. I mean, Xbox is doing a big play for original content with that ET documentary that, you know, they're talking about, or they're making right now. And I'm wondering if, is that going to come to Showtime too?
Yeah, or somewhere else where I don't know. And the reason I wanted to bring it up, and so I didn't mean to give No One Lives Forever a short shrift, because I think it is, they're fantastic games. And if they come out, everyone should play them. But it's just been bubbling in the back of my mind where I'm not sure if this is, I'm excited for this, because if this series is great, more people will see it. And that's a thing that I'm passionate about, getting into the mainstream in the way that, you know, Game of Thrones is popular culture, whereas before it was maybe only fantasy nerds reading the books. I mean, I know they were very popular books, but it didn't have the mass appeal that it does now. Or does it make me sad because it kind of shows that, not that I was right, but like the hobby that I love, or where digital distribution isn't able to support things like this yet. And that makes me sad, because at the end of the day, as dead as we say TV is, it's not.
Right. Yeah. Traditional media certainly still rules the roost. And it doesn't really make much sense to me from Showtime's perspective either, because it's like, if what you're trying to do is drive subscriptions to Showtime, and the core audience of people who want to watch your show can get it on Xbox Live, it seems like a strange play from their perspective as well.
Well, Jeff, the article said that they get it early, right? So I guess that's their only play. Is that
Showtime gets it first?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's like Xbox Live will be the HBO Go in this scenario, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting. A couple other stories I wanted to hit on, simply because they were submitted by so many people. We got this story submitted by at Gas Weinhardt, at Heart of a Gamer, and others saying, Neversoft, merging with Infinity Ward. Neversoft, the company that brought us Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and Guitar Hero, a local LA company, in fact, gone. No more. Possibly the silliest title in all of video game developer houses, but it's gone. And it looks like the studio heads, Joel Jewett, and the studio director, Scott Pease, are also both retiring from games. So internal memo that was broken by a friend of the show, Patrick Klepek, over at Giant Bomb, from the CEO of Activision Publishing, Eric Hirschberg, said, yep. These guys were creating a super studio. We're taking the folks from Neversoft, we're linking them into Infinity Ward, and they're staying called Infinity Ward. Big deal, also, little deal, no deal, what?
Well, it's a great spin on Neversoft closed. We're retaining most of the talent and bringing them over to Infinity. I think calling this a merger is PR spin. I think it's always sad when you lose a studio that could maybe be doing new, cool, creative things, while Neversoft has maybe become stale and became a franchise churn and burn for Activision later. They did some great work on the Tony Hawk series, and, you know, I think they had some cool ideas with Guitar Hero back in the day before they just had to, you know, I think Guitar Hero 3 was pretty great. So hopefully most people got to stay and didn't lose their jobs. I don't think it's going to be a super studio. I think they're going to keep doing what they were doing and be support on Call of Duty games.
Yeah. Hopefully that most of the people there are still employed and still making great stuff. That's what we want to see. Also, this story... don't need to talk about it too terribly much, but I just wanted to mention it. It was submitted by at Great White, who wanted us to talk a little bit about the community manager for Evolve from Turtle Rock Studios was fired because of Twitter. He mentioned, I guess, something you could consider supporting Donald Sterling, the owner of the LA Clippers, who get into hot water this week. Well, hot water is understating it, because of really repugnant things that he was recorded as saying. But Josh Olin, the community manager at Evolve, or now former, because he was fired for his remarks, he basically came out and said, this guy was recorded, and it sort of sucks that his personal recordings were played to the masses. But because of how awful the things that were recorded are, I guess you're not allowed to say stuff like that on Twitter. And I think the reason I wanted to bring it up is just to reiterate to people that think about what you put out into the world. it's always more than just your own personal thoughts. You know, you're broadcasting what you think to people. So,
but what if I put on my Twitter profile bio, the opinions here are my own? Then I can say whatever I want, right?
Well, that's between you and your employer, I would guess.
Hey, what if I put in my bio, I can't be fired for saying stuff here? And then, like, legally, it's like asking a cop if they're a cop, right?
Right.
What's weird is that it's not like he's the one who said those crazy comments that Sterling said, you know? He was just saying, like, and again, I'm not promoting what he promoted, whatever, that's 6 degrees of something. But, you know, he wasn't being like, obviously, I agree with you. When you go on Twitter, you know, you say some hateful, mean things, you know, you're putting it out onto the world, and that's not cool. What he was doing, which is less than that, was he was saying, hey, this person who said these terrible things, maybe you found out about it in a weird privacy kind of way, you know?
Well, where he seemed to go over the line is calling Sterling a victim and saying that you can't really blame the guy because he's old. I think that's pretty awful to say, you know, well, old people are above reproach. But yeah, I mean, it sucks that the guy lost his job. And he had a really, I think, classy statement that he came out with afterwards saying, you know, still, these guys are making an awesome game over at Turtle Rock. And I thought that was nice. But
yeah, it's unfortunate he lost his job. I agree with what you said and how you sign off the show. You know, think about what you put into the world. But I also think that if you are a community manager, especially, or anything similar to that, even if you have a personal Twitter account, it better just be supporting the sports team you like by saying rah, rah sports team or Instagram pictures of food, because it's, you know, it's really, really close to what you do. You are a voice for this company, and even your personal account needs to be crystal, crystal, crystal clear and clean. And otherwise, you run that risk.
Hey, are you guys excited about a new Amplitude?
Can Harmonix I pay money doing for a Kickstarter it before it comes for it?
Out? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Do you want to?
No, but I hope it comes out. I don't kickstart video games.
You kick stop them.
I punch stop them.
Go over to Cynic's Corner and log on to kickstop.com.
Punch stop. Is there a video game getting kickstarted that's close to its goal? Go over to punchstop.com and don't give us money, and we will take money from that Kickstarter.
Punchstop.
Where you can pre-order games to make sure they don't. Where you can un-pre-order games at Punchstop. Welcome to Punchstop.
Punch games in the face.
I love Amplitude. I really like the first one, though. I think it's sad that this game needs a Kickstarter, but I guess the reason there hasn't been a sequel is that no publisher believed in it, perhaps?
Yeah. Well, I guess that we're in the era where that doesn't matter anymore, which is kind of cool, I think. Carlos, were you an Amplitude guy in the PS2 days?
I was a Frequency guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Frequency. I remember loving that game. And
it's the Frequency Kenneth.
I don't remember. Yes, of course. I don't remember. I really haven't played a rhythm game in a while. I do remember loving it when it first came out and being surprised that it could be a game, you know, like, oh, these kind of rhythms in this song, I'm making the song, this is pretty amazing. And then, of course, there's the Guitar Heroes and the Rock Bands, and I'm a little, you know, tired of it. But at the same time, what I really like to see is, what was that Guitar Man? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
That's what I want to see more of, like a story-based music rhythm game. You know, there's things that are close to that. There's that weird
like
pedal game. Yeah. Have you tried that game where you, I don't know if this is brand safe, but let's just say it's a flower and you pet the petals or something. Or it's like a,
no.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's like a sex simulator guitar game?
No, it's like,
guitar is a sex simulator.
There's no acoustic guitar. It's like, you just continually go down this, like, it all sounds bad. Like this beautiful scenery thing that you're going along, kind of a la Frequency. And you kind of massage the sides of the circle. Oh, it all sounds bad.
Don't say anything. We're going to just let Carlos keep going.
Yeah, he's going to dig himself his own
and
hole.
And then, now anyways, that did something different. The chef probably knows the name of that game.
Do you know about Crypt of the Necro Dancer?
No, but now I want to.
Yeah, I think it's the game that you want. It's a rhythm-based roguelike. We talked about it a few weeks ago when I saw it at PAX, and Garnet saw it. GDC. It's a full-on roguelike, but you control it based on moving in rhythm to the music on a controller, or there's support for a dance pad. It's pretty glorious.
I'm just totally going to get it, and I just remembered one because you said that. Soul Fjord. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of thing where you walk around. That's also kind of a roguelike game. I played it for my Ouya. Yes, I do love the Ouya. I'm of the minority there. But you still use music and rhythm to do different things. But for me, just going around in a circle, you know, it's hard for me to get excited about that nowadays.
All right, so we're wrapping up the old story of the week. But before we do, I wanted to go to the phones and see what the other people have on there as their story of the week. And I see from the chat room that there might be somebody on the line who supports my story of the week. So I'm going to him. 479. What is your story of the week?
Oh, hey, Jeff and Christian and Carlos. This is Billy from Northwest Arkansas. How you guys doing?
Very well.
Nope.
Good. I think No One Lives Forever got a little bit of a short shrift there, but I'm a huge fan of that series. So let me just put to the panel, if it was going to get a reboot and there were going to be some new eyes, like you suggested, who would you like to see oversee that? My first pick would be, and it probably won't happen now because of her new job, but Amy Hennig, mostly because of her experience overseeing the Uncharted series, which I think there's some commonalities there with the action and the, you know, the fun banter and the sense of humor and the adventure style that both of those games had. I know they were different games, but there's, I think, enough commonality there that she might be somebody who would have been a great boss for a team that was going to redo that game. Any thoughts? Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Billy. Great call. I completely agree. I think she would be fantastic, especially, you know, you get that female sensibility as well, which I think should not be understated. And she's such a great writer and there's a lot of humor in the Uncharted games. Man, I think that would be really awesome. I'm excited that she's doing Star Wars. You know, I think that's great too. But do you have any other ideas, guys? Who could make that series great? Any other developers?
Double Fine?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Double Fine writing. I don't know if they could do the gameplay, not, I mean, I guess Trenched had some pretty sweet, I mean, different, but yeah, I think Double Fine could be great. I mean, if you look at old, the most recent ones haven't made me laugh as much, but I think the humor in Ratchet and Clank games is pretty great, and the action in Ratchet and Clank is pretty phenomenal. So
even the guys who do Borderlands, I think, those are similarly toned and really tight first-person shooters. So that could be cool. I think even Kate Archer games would make great fodder for Telltale to make a adventure game with. I mean, I think she is a strong enough lead character, and those storylines are strong enough that a Telltale-style adventure game could work in that universe.
Sure.
Good call. Very, very good call. All right. It's time to move on to the playlist. And there's no playlist bumper music, but that's okay because I'm told it's coming. I've gotten whispers through the interwebs that we're going to have cool bumper music. But that leads me to the question, Carlos, what this week has been on your playlist?
I am playing a Steam game called Adventurer Manager, which doesn't roll off the tongue. Adventurer Manager.
Rural Juror.
Right, sure. I think it's fun because I think Jeff knows this, but I love random and weird, but now they're calling organic or emergent gameplay. But I definitely love the kind of weird randomness in games, and I like RPGs. So this mixes those two together and then also puts a simulator kind of spin on it. So basically what it is you create these little parties of characters, all 8-bit style. You have one world map, and you make these parties and you equip them however you want, do their stats up. Then you send them on these little adventures, and each adventure is like randomly generated in, down to like how it's said. So an example is, I have one in here in front of me. Riley, the penguinologist, because that's a thing, please go to cave, whatever, and attack 173 old ladies. That's like a mission. And by the way, we were talking about this in another podcast. I did that and I got like 30 gold. That means not all of those old ladies had gold. And I killed them anyhow. Anyways, I could have stopped killing old ladies, what I'm saying. And then, you know, like your backstory gets filled in like randomly. So my backstory is, which is his name was Jeff, ironically. Jeff enjoys pants.
Well, I do.
You do. And cookies.
Don't you hate pants?
He likes pants and cookies, but he does not like snakes. He was embarrassed of being a carrot cutter, so he decided to become an adventurer. That was my backstory. So minus the randomness, which is really fun. What's interesting about it, it's almost like one of those football or sports simulators where you can set up a bunch of different parties of characters and you can do things manually. So you can actually do the fun going through the dungeons and, you know, doing turn-based combat. But you can also just set them to auto and they'll go into a dungeon and there's a little timer that gets down and then they come out and say, oh, Jeff died, but we got this really cool sword.
This game sounds crazy.
Yeah,
absolutely crazy.
Good.
Crazy good. How much is it?
Oh, yeah, I should have checked that, right? It's like really cheap. It's Steam.
Cool.
It changes.
Adventure Manager.
Yeah, the price changes like randomly. Sometimes 12? It's 173.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christian, yeah, what's on your playlist, buddy?
So some quick hits here. I don't think I've talked about it, but I've been playing it again on my Vita, and then it was just on my Vita, go figure. You know, it was on sale for, and also, ooh, man, those PSN sales, they're having flash sales, one-day sales, especially if you're a PS Plus member. They are Steam rival worthy. Some great prices on games. Injustice, I think I might own 5 versions of Injustice, Gods Among Us. What a great, I really love, not necessarily a great competitive fighting game, but in terms of making a single-player game, a single-player fighting game, those NetherRealm guys, I think, kick it. They kick it out of the park. They didn't even use the bat. They kicked it out of the park. Kickball. Kickball home run.
Kickball, yeah.
The story mode is fun. Like, the challenge towers are, you know, they each have their different, if it's Mortal Kombat or Injustice, are fun and unique and frustrating in a good way. The games look pretty. It was on sale for PS4. Like, the complete edition, I believe, was like $20 recently. And on Vita, I think I ended up getting it for $10 when it was on sale. So I've been spending more time with that. I think it's fantastic. I've been spending more time back in racing games. And I don't know if Garnet or any other racers are listening. I feel like when I talk about racing games, it's, you know, other people aren't as interested, i.e. Jeff. But I have come to the conclusion now that I prefer arcade racers now over sim racers, because I think arcade racers do a better job of making me feel like I'm actually driving, in the sense that I was going back through Forza 5, and you play in the slower cars. Like, you know, you start with, you know, like the Scion FRS, or, you know, a Volkswagen GTI, or that type of car. And you can have a lot of fun in that type of car, but what sim games don't convey is the fun of losing control, where you're excited / scared and you're going fast and you're pushing your car to the limit. And I don't think they can convey that, because, like Jeff, you talked about, you know, you have your seat of your pants feel. And,
well, it's sensation. Yeah, there's not enough, right? Eyes and ears is not enough sensation to make me feel like I've lost control.
Right. And I think sim games are still fun, but what arcade games do is, because they're arcade and they're not trying to sim it, I think they do a better job of giving you that adrenaline rush than sim games do in real driving, at least in my experience, you know, with autocross and taking a car on a road track, gives you that adrenaline. It's exhilarating. And I think in a burnout or, the most recent Need for Speed games, when you find your line and you're running away from cops and you have a spike strip coming up and you floss through it and you drift around a corner and then you punch your turbo and get out, that does a better job of getting my heart racing the same way finding a good line through an uphill S-turn does in a real car. So I've gone back now to Need for Speed, and I'm having fun with that. And then the last point for what I wanted to be on my playlist, and I don't know if it's really been talked about, I wanted to rent Spider-Man 2 because I know, in my opinion, it's not worth a purchase. You can't really rent next current-gen Xbox One or PS4 games, right? Like, Gamefly is maybe your only option. Redbox doesn't carry them. Blockbuster's dead.
I thought Redbox was going to carry them. I thought that we'd heard that.
Well, they don't anywhere near me. It was just, this is the first time I tried to do it, and I couldn't, which is weird or interesting. It was a revelation for me. It was like, oh, crap, we're here. Like, I could buy it for $60 and get it, play it immediately, you know, download it, but I can't time rental it, or I can't, iTunes, you can buy them. I'm sorry?
What about Playcast? I've been actually experimenting with that on my Ouya. Weirdly enough, Ouya is trying out Playcast, where you can stream games. And I know this is not the first time. We've all heard about OnLive, and we know that it's not worked in the past because of connection speeds, etc. But I mean, I have a really good connection right now, and it's streaming beautifully. I just played Halo Batman sounds great. Lego Batman. On my Ouya via this Playcast technology, and it was a demo, you know, but it was perfect. So I'm wondering if we could do more streaming of a rental.
Yeah, and OnLive certainly tried that. I think I'm excited about that. Hopefully people get into that, because I don't rent things a lot, but it was kind of sad when I wanted to and couldn't, versus this weekend my brother-in-law and his wife and their kid were over, and you know, we could just rent Frozen immediately and start watching it. And while the technology has been there for movies and music and stuff like that in terms of renting it or sampling it, I think we're moving away from that in games. But maybe not. Maybe it's just not ready for prime time yet, or maybe I'm just ignorant. And people in the chat have said that, I guess, Redbox near them have Xbox One and PS4. None within like a 10-mile radius of me seem to carry it yet. So anyway, I did not play Spider-Man 2. It is not on my playlist.
Did you see the movie?
Not yet. It's I was going to, and then I didn't.
Well, my playlist has remained the same all week because I'm in the trinity of ping-pong-pinging between Dark Souls 2, Hearthstone, and Elder Scrolls Online. And so last week when I talked about Dark Souls 2, you I kind of took what you said, Christian, as a challenge, because you said I was sort of tethered to my mentor, my little Dark Souls mentor, Dan Trachtenberg, and I decided that I would try to venture out more on my own and see if the game was only fun because I was a Padawan and I could sort of try my skills on my own. And I got to say, you know, I've locked into what makes that game fun. And having, once you acquire the soapstone and you're able to put yourself into other people's games, basically the way I can play this game now is I can go to a new area, go to the bonfire in that new area, lay my soapstone down on the ground and get called into other people's games and help them until I die, which is a no risk proposition. When I'm in someone else's game, I'm not risking any of my souls. I'm not risking my humanity by, you know, going undead, any of that.
Hey guys, I'm here to help. I'll be right back. I died.
Well, that happens a lot. That can happen. But also, if you do that enough times, you sort of start learning that part of the level, and you do it over and over and over again, and you learn what lies around this corner, what lies around that corner, where the secrets are, because you watch the actual person's game you're in, find them and do them, and you're fighting bad guys with them. And then you can get to the end, and if you manage to help them fight the boss, you end up with a victorious designation, and you, if you are undead, you restore your humanity without having to use a human effigy. So it's this great way to learn the level, no risk, grind souls, because you're earning souls that entire time over and over again. And if you had died in your game, earn back your humanity. So there's actually very a very easy way to play this game that's stress-free. And when people talk about how hard it is and how stressful it is, I don't think I really recognize how easy it can be or how stress-free it can be if you play it in a certain way. And then once you get to the point where you feel like you know the level well enough, you know the bad guys and how they attack and what dangers lurk, then you can, you know, go into your own game and summon people into your game and go through it with a team of helpful, not invincible, but risk-free people who can plunge ahead and even kind of tank the boss for you oftentimes. So the game can, if you rely on that multiplayer aspect, it can be relatively easy and not intense. And it's still really fun because the item progression in the game is really fun. The character progression in the game is really fun. I'm in the mid-60s right now of soul level, which is really low because anytime you move any one stat up, you go up a soul level. So you end up, you know, going up very fast. But I've downed bosses on my own. I've gone into other people's games and helped them down bosses. I feel very confident with some of the weapons that I've got. And I'm really digging the game. I'm having a great time playing it still. So
that's awesome. You
know, yeah. Yeah. So I would encourage people, if you had felt like I felt, which was sort of off-put by the game and almost intimidated by it, give it a shot. Because there are lots of ways to play that are not risky.
Are you getting raided? Like, once you open up, you know, does this have ramifications for your game? Or are people, is the community, I wonder if it's because it's a smaller community, and certainly not tiny, this is a very popular game, but is it a better community than because it's not Halo or something like that?
You bring up raiding. Well, first of all, it's got that same thing that I laud Hearthstone for, which is it restricts communication. And I think that in so many ways, so many games could benefit from that, because when all you can do is gestures to other people, you don't feel like they're being dicks. You honestly think people are nice when all they can do is point or you know, celebrate or, you know, there's like, a you know, six or seven standard gestures that you can do. When you have a limited amount of communication, you don't assume people are being a-holes, even if they might be screaming at their screen at you, you know? So that goes a long way. But you do bring up a good point, which is that going into other people's games and getting invaded, and I had that happen a few times this week, and it is a thrilling, scary, crazy moment. Because one of the smart things they do is when somebody comes into your game, your controller vibrates. So you feel it before you see it, because they don't come in standing straight in front of you. They come in some part of the area you're in. So you don't know where they are, and you just know danger, and it has arrived. And it says, you know, so-and-so has invaded your game. So then you're on your toes to like either try to banish them by using an item or kill them. And man, it's so fun when someone goes into your game and thinks they're going to be awesome and you kill them. Oh, there's nothing more exhilarating in games than that. It's pretty amazing.
You're currently opening my eyes to go back and play Dark Souls 2. So success, sir.
It took a lot for me to do it, man. I resisted and resisted, and I kept thinking, oh, this isn't a game for me. It really isn't. But I'm eating my words. I'm eating all the crow, because it is a game I look forward to playing every day. I try to carve out time to play it every day, even when I can't get on with my buddy. I play by myself, I grind souls, I, you know, explore parts of the level, and I try to venture out on my own as well. It's pretty cool.
Jeff, do you know what happened the last time a Padawan went out without their master? It didn't end well.
I think his mom was slaughtered, and then he had to kill all the baby Jedis. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Can we say that that's not canon? Okay, I'm going to call over Bad Robot and just say, look, you know what? Keep some of the books as canon and get rid of, let's make some changes. From this point forward, episodes 1, 2, and 3 aren't canon. Done. We did it. We made a change. Let's get a press release out.
I heard a rumor that internally that's what JJ is working on the assumption of, that none of those things will be referenced. But I don't know if that's just a rumor.
Episode 7 starts and it's Anakin waking up and going, I had the most terrible dream.
Yeah, it's the Newhart ending.
It's like the end of Super Mario Brothers 2, where all of a sudden it's just a little cloud above his head. All the game was it? By the way, spoiler for Super Mario Brothers 2. That's all.
I think we're past the statute of limitations on that. Now, I also wanted to mention something else about Elder Scrolls Online. And you guys will probably laugh at me and tell me I'm crazy and that no one wants to do this, but I want
crazy.
No one wants to do that.
So there is a dialogue system in this game, similar to all of the Bethesda role-playing games, where you lock into a character and you're staring at them and they say something and then you have a thing you respond to, you click on that and yada, yada, yada. You have a dialogue with them. And in this MMO, as in all the Elder Scrolls games, I'm actually listening. All of the, at least in the recent Elder Scrolls games, all of the dialogue is acted by an actor. So I'm listening to it. I'm interested in how that actor, you know, the inflections that they're using. And I'm engaged in the conversation because it's interesting, it's well written, and it's well performed. And it has ramifications for my world. I'm not just clicking through the quest like, tell me how many pelts to buy. But I notice that when I play it, I'm watching the words as the person reads them. And then I'm reading my response in my head and then clicking the one I want, right? What if instead of reading the response in my head, I said it out loud to my Kinect or my PlayStation, whatever, or whatever, you know, to my speaker system that's listening to me all the time. And then now I'm actually having a verbal, actual dialogue with this character. I think that would be really fun, and it would invest me in the world even more and interactive in a cool way. And yes, I know everybody leaps to, oh, you're talking to your TV alone in your room like a moron, but I think it would be cool.
But wasn't Jeff, would you be saying the actual choices?
Well,
or would you be saying your own natural language?
You would be saying the choice that you wanted to go with.
Isn't that Mass Effect 3 with Kinect enabled?
Well, Mass Effect 3 lets you, yeah, you say the one word that then leads him to his full sentence, right?
Right. Oh, you want to say the full thing.
No, you're not actually, you are then waiting to see how your on-screen character interprets that, right? And it's shot like a television series where it's shot reverse shot and you're seeing your Shepard talk. I'm talking about in an Elder Scrolls game, you are in first-person perspective. Even if you're playing in third person perspective, when you get into a dialogue situation, it zooms in on the face and you are staring at that person and you do not hear right. your guy reiterate it. He doesn't have a voice, right? Your guy or girl, I should say. He has no voice other than your voice. So why not supply your voice as his voice?
So Jeff, I'd want to do that if it, you know, I'd want to do that in the alternate reality, which we can't do yet, where I could say what I wanted and it would actually understand. And it wasn't one of the three choices, you know, but if it's one of the three choices, then essentially I'm reading and then also say, and then also talking. I feel like it's like doubling up my output.
I think, honestly, I think that it would still be fun. I understand you want the reality where you're just interacting, you know, that's a holodeck, right? But we're clearly not there yet. I mean, Siri says hi, but I think it's still just this half step toward that.
Say hi, Siri.
Hello, Siri.
Yeah.
That was worth it for me, by the way.
Totally worth it. Anyway, so I think that it would still be just that half step toward me talking to the computer and it talking back to me would be cool. And then if you add Oculus into it where I can look around while I'm in that, I think that'd be awesome. So what I want, I know I'm probably alone and you guys are over there in Cynic's Corner.
We're not in Cynic's Corner. Damn it!
I'll take a three-quarter step between, you know, the perfect world of what Carlos is, you know, wishing for or wanting, and, you know, the horrible version that you're proposing. No, I'm just kidding. And your version, Jeff. I mean, I think it'd be cool if it had a pretty amazing library. Like Siri does a pretty good job, right? Of not in terms of necessarily understanding you, but, you know, comprehending or interpret what you're trying to say and coming up with a response that seems to fit. And I wouldn't mind if this game, if like an Elder Scrolls didn't understand everything. I kind of like the old King's Quest and Space Quest days where you would type things in and eventually you got to the point where the responses were the same, like, I'm sorry, there are no tacos or, you know, whatever. But that's supposedly
the Shroud of the Avatar is going to have. It's literally going to parse your sentences. You're literally going to type whatever you want and it'll try. And he said, because it's an MMO and they're gathering data throughout the process, that the longer the game is out and the more responses they get from people, the better NPCs will respond because it will learn from you.
Right. And I'm saying that's exactly it.
Yeah. They're talking about crowdsourcing. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christian.
Oh, no. That with voice is cool. Like, I would like that. you know, it doesn't need to be perfect, Carlos, like what you're saying, where it can understand everything. I think it could be fun if it has this great thing and it continues to learn and has a smart AI. But Jeff, I think it would be cool, like you're saying, is you say your response and then you get, and if it doesn't fully understand you, I would love it so you're not limited to the three choices. You can say what you feel and the NPC can be like, I'm not sure what you're saying, you know, a fun, witty way of being like, I don't know. I feel like I should, and then maybe try to hint you towards real options or something like that. Like, it's obviously a game in limits of current technology, but like, let's have fun in this fantasy that we're actually engaging with one another.
Well,
I'm going
to
pull myself out of Cynic's corner. I'm going to pull myself out of Cynic's corner real quick and say that into the optimism corner, which I've now made. You know, a lot of times this conversation comes up and about technology, like current technology. It's going to get there. You know what I mean? I think that what you want, Jeff, is definitely something awesome. I think that game developers know that. I think things like crowdsourcing, you know, AI and crowdsourcing user and NPC responses like Shroud of Avatar is going to do are all directions and, you know, points to that. So I feel like we're going to get there. It's just a matter of time.
It turns out there was no Cynic's Corner. You were in Cynic's world the whole time.
I want to point out what Payne said in the chat room, which is Siri's been getting crowdsourced data for many years and still sucks, which is a fair point. I think you guys are missing kind of my point. I'm not interested in having the experience where I say something with my voice and I hear the computer-generated voice go, "Yes, your quest is now to get those 12 pelts." I do enjoy the actor having interpreted the lines, and it's a script, but I am now participating. I'm reading the other lines in the script back to him so that I'm actually talking back and forth. Yes, my lines are written for me, and maybe I happen to like that because that's what I like to do for a living, but I do think that would provide a really interesting gameplay experience to read my lines to the computer and have that person talk back. So I feel like I'm having a discussion.
Hey, Jeff are you on?
Go ahead.
I was going to say to get book nerdy real quick. What you're describing is from Fahrenheit 451. I don't remember that book.
That's true. Yes.
There's these essentially these like plays that happen on their TV walls. And this is like same thing as 1948, written a long time ago and talking about this basically projector type thing that would be on their walls. And in that world, they would turn on the soap opera, you know, whatever soap opera it was, and the woman was home. And she would just put in her little earbud, and I guess there was some sort of microphone on her, you know, shirt or something. And when it came time for her character to talk, she would just talk to the screen, and then everybody else would be broadcast at the same time, so they'd all see whatever she did. So... Yeah. That's a little ways down the road, but it is that same kind of thing where you're becoming the actor of it.
Yeah, Ready Player One has a similar thing as well. I also want to point out in the chat room, Frontier Whiskey said he was playing Tom Clancy's Endor demo one day a few years ago and issuing commands with his voice, and his cats were looking at him like he was a crazy person. So, you know, I understand that that's the other problem people have too. This is an interesting comment also in the chat room from Great White. One step further, have the camera read your facial expressions and talk to you accordingly. I think that would be cool. I mean, this is all Peter Molyneux type stuff, but really cool potential, and I want that. But it also reminded me that watching that Call of Duty Advanced Warfare demo, you really notice how dead-faced the Kevin Spacey player model is, and how even a lot of games that have come out recently that have been much more facially animated, how the Call of Duty demo trailer just did not shine in that area. Especially seeing an actor you see on TV all the time, it really feels like he has dead face. But
especially when you saw L.A. Noire, remember how good that was? I feel like that was even better than Kevin Spacey dead face.
It makes me sad that tech didn't take off. I loved that game.
I know.
Let's go to the phones and see what somebody else has been on their playlist. 269, you are on the air. What's on your playlist this week?
Actually, not a whole lot. I was actually kind of preempting tabletop time. But as far as what you're talking about now, it's kind of interesting. I like the idea. Oh, I forgot to introduce myself again. This is Michael from Kalamazoo. And I guess I'm kind of in the Cynic's Corner. It's a cool idea, and it would add a lot of immersion to it, but I don't think it's just something that's ready to happen right yet.
Can I ask you a quick question? Why aren't you playing a lot right now? What's keeping you away from gaming, or what do you wish you were playing?
I'm just kind of working on other things right now. I was kind of trying out the Diablo 3 expansion, but it just wasn't grabbing me. I'm actually kind of going hardcore into my cosplay project right now because I have a convention coming up.
Epic. Ooh, what are you cosplaying as?
Yeah, what's a blurry pic of you?
I'm going to be the... we're doing Monty Python and the Holy Grail. My roommate's going to be King Arthur, and I'm going to be Pat Teal. Follow him around with a couple of coconuts and bang them together while he pretends to ride a horse.
Awesome, nice. Man. Well, good luck on the costume.
Yeah, we'll come back to you for tabletop time, which I believe is now.
Tabletop time. Right now.
Time. Well, I noticed here on the list, Carlos, that you got some old school tabletop games you wanted to mention. Hit me with your memories.
Yeah, I love this part of the show. I'm so happy that you do it. I started with Avalon Hill Games, again, showing my age, and a lot of those strategy games. I also played, which wasn't on the spreadsheet, Star Trek. I remember a Star Trek game where you allocated points to shields. Remember that?
Back in an old school Star Trek game? Or there's a bunch of them that just came out recently. Star Trek.
Fleet Real Commander. Old. It was like these diagrams of ships, and it was almost like too mathy for me. But
I don't think I ever played that, no.
Yeah, you basically, it was a lot of time spending allocating a point to shields. But around that same time, was one of my favorite games that was basically a tabletop game as well as a role-playing game in a way. It was Car Wars from Steve Jackson. There was actually, I was a Commodore 64 nerd, so I had Auto Duel, which was the video game version of it, which wasn't as good. But what was really exciting was that kind of feeling of having a huge map literally on the table, something you buy at the nerdy... Yeah, bookstore or game store that they don't, they didn't sell like pre-made fancy maps. We just got like grid paper and put it out. And then, you have these little cars and there's like role-playing elements. So you're putting points in, again, in shields and kind of putting your armor on and different machine guns. And then you're driving your cars around, but you're doing it all with dice and rolls and role-playing. Do you remember that? Did you play that?
I did. I remember vividly the box with the red driver, like rocking it out. This game, like in the '80s, it came out in the early '80s, I believe. And I think they had a recent Kickstarter. Steve Jackson had a recent Kickstarter to republish it, but I don't know.
Anything to do with it. They won't.
Not if Punchstopper has anything to do with it. Oh
man. I didn't know that. I'll go look that up because I would love to support it. I mean, Steve Jackson in general, just GURPS and all that stuff. We won't go into it, but that was a huge part of my role-playing life. And this concept of having a little car, kind of worrying about how it's built, its engines down to its very specific, machine guns are on the left side and the right side. And what's my, armor like, and then just doing that with friends was just really fun.
Yeah. Car role-playing games were an actual subgenre that had a lot of life at a certain period, but they've kind of gone out of vogue. You don't really see those, but those were always like post-apocalyptic sort of Mad Max-esque car role-playing games. And it'd be interesting to see one of those made nowadays. It could be cool. Last week I teased the fact that I finally got around to playing Terra Mystica, which is a game that I have been dying to play. I actually got it for Christmas, and it took me this long to get it to the table because it's pretty intense. It's a pretty dense game, but man, did it live up to the hype. I really dig it. Huge, massive box, tons of little bits and pieces. But the really wonderful thing about Terra Mystica is that all the information you need, it's kind of hard to parse the rules, and they're pretty dense. But once you get your head around the rules, all the information you need is in front of you. It's beautifully graphically designed. Each player has their own little player board, and then there's a larger board for everyone to play on. And on your little player board in front of you, you keep all of your bits and pieces that you can possibly use. And when you place them out on the board, they open up things where they had been sitting, opens up things that give you more information as to what you have or don't have in the next income phase. So everything you need to know, what you're going to earn next time, what things cost, how things interact with certain things, the tech tree when you're building buildings, all of it is so beautifully, elegantly displayed there on your player mat. I am so impressed with this game. So let me give you a little bit of an overview as to what it is. It's a fantasy-themed game where you're playing one of, I think, 14 different races. Elves and halflings and giants and mermaids and all kinds of stuff. And each race plays differently. They all have special powers that are unique to them. So it's really interesting that each game you can try something else and you'll play the game differently. But all of those races have a type of terrain that they are native to. And the big main board that everybody is playing on has the world map broken up into hexes that are divided into those kinds of terrains. So you're trying to expand your empire based on terraforming and building buildings onto that map and have the largest surface area and build certain buildings that'll give you special powers, all of which will earn you points. So you're butting up against other races that are trying to build in their areas. And because I built something next to your thing, you get certain bonuses. So I have to be careful how I do that. And the only way to build things is if I have my native kind of terrain. So I can terraform other types of terrain by spending action points to, you know, build my kind of terrain on top of it. And you have this wheel of terrain types. The farther away from your native terrain type on the wheel, the more difficult it is for you to get that. So all of that goes into play as you're conquering that world, as you're expanding your territories, as you're terraforming and building buildings out and trying to link your multiple buildings into a city. But on top of all that, you also have magic that you can use. And the magic system in this game is really interesting. You've got three little bowls of power, they're called, and you have little bits that sit into each bowl. And doing certain things lets you push bits from bowl one into bowl two or from bowl two into bowl three. And you can't use any of your magic power until you have the bits sitting in bowl three with none of them in bowl one. But using them requires you to push them from bowl three into bowl one. So you have to decide, because once you've used, if you use just a little bit of magic, you push just a few into bowl one, but now you can't use more that you have still in bowl three until you push those out of bowl one. So it's this interesting give and take between, do I want to save up and get everything into bowl three and use a big power, or do I want to use a little power, which prevents me from using magic again for a few more turns? It's a really interesting game. It's complex, but freaking awesome. Has lots of replayability because there's so many variables at play. Even the bonuses each round, there's point bonuses based on doing certain actions, and those all change from game to game, so you never know exactly which point bonuses are going to be in play. So much to this game. It's beautiful. The art is absolutely stunning. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. This is an extremely expensive game, but it's worth every penny. I'm blown away by Terra Mystica.
It's interesting, right? I feel like, you know, if you look at TV shows or movies or even video games or other board games either too, perhaps simpler board games, you can see what the genesis was, what the spark for the thing is. Like, okay, this episode of Arrow, they had this cool idea to have him and, you know, get into this fight or whatever, and they built a story around it. Or this video game, they had this mechanic that they wanted to do, and then in video games, it's repeating the fun, right? And with this game, and often a lot of, you know, these more complex video games and board games, like, what do you think was the moment of fun, their aha moment that they had, that they built the game around? And then by adding the magic onto it, is it necessary? Does it increase that moment-to-moment fun? Or that's what I think is so fascinating about board games. I think it's great when we have people on this show that can talk about the design process, because at some point, and this applies, I think, to video games or any sport even too, adding complexity, there's that point, right? If they added one more thing, like, oh, and then you have a weapon management system, and then you need to move it from, you know, table one to table two, and doing so then takes one of your, like, you'd be like, nope, too confusing, who cares? But I feel like how you're describing this, they've struck that balance of keeping you engaged but in not making it too complex to scare you away from it.
You know, what do you think was the thing
that they were like, that's amazing, let's make that the game, and then they built around that?
Well, it's hard to pinpoint that with this game because there's so many moving parts and there's a lot going on. And I'm often blown away by some of the design layers that happen in these more complex Euro games like Terra Mystica.
Yeah.
But, we had Tom Vassell on the show several weeks ago, and he does a show about board games. And one of his contributors is this really brilliant guy named Jeff Engelstein, who's actually the designer of several really excellent games, including Space Cadets and Space Cadets Dice Duel. And he does this... this piece on that show where he kind of goes in depth about the design process and sort of interesting theoretical ideas. And he, one of his pieces a while back was about the idea that for a game to work, it can only introduce one new thing to the pile. There has to be a sort of an established series of innovations before that, that it can rest on, but it can only add one new one. So for example, in Terra Mystica, you have area control, which is, you know, building your stuff on this map. You have that. That's been well established in lots of games for a long time. It may be new to people that aren't into board games, but the board game community knows how to wrap its head around that aspect. Also, these player boards and variable powers and the way it sort of building buildings and upgrading buildings and tech trees, all that stuff existed before. So their one thing that they added is this interesting magic system. Now, to some people that haven't played games like this before, it might be really overwhelming because it's all new. But but once you start adding more than one new thing to a game, at least Jeff Engelstein's position is that that's when games become too overwhelming and unpopular, because you're only allowed to actually add to the pile in one way.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody in the chat room, I think it went by a little earlier, said they didn't like the game, and they thought that when they played it, who was that? Didn't like the game and thought it was just a pasted on. Here it is. Editor FB. Didn't like the game, Terra Mystica. Theme was pasted on, and you never feel like it's a fantasy game, and it's way too long. I didn't find it to be too long. I really didn't. I found out once we learned it, it kind of moved on at a pretty good clip, because as long as you don't, it's one of those games that can suffer from analysis paralysis in people. So if people are really pondering their turn, you have to wait for them to do their turn. But once you kind of get in the click of things, we moved along pretty good. And as far as the pasted on theme, I think any Euro game, they tend to be accused of that often. And this one certainly does feel like it's not built around fantasy per se. This could be really anything, but I liked the fantasy aspect of it. I liked the fact that the mermaids could use water better than, you know, anybody else. And I liked the fact that I could use magic. And I thought there was enough fantasy elements that I was invested in. I thought it was really fun. So it didn't feel that pasted on to me. And I thought the mechanics were interesting enough that I was still having enough fun that even if it was a little bit thin, it didn't detract from the experience.
And at the end of the day, like the chat room says, Jeff, you know, when you're with friends, time just flies by. I mean, when I play board games with friends and like they said, chips and dip are available, I mean, hours just go by, you know? So for me, I haven't found a game recently where I'm like, wow, this is too long. I mean, if we're just about to go somewhere and we want to do a couple quick, you know, zombie dice, that makes sense. But if we're like in it for the long haul, it can actually be not enough hours for me. I'm like totally fine with it going on.
Well, time flies on this show as well, which is the reason that we're already here at the end. It's been another great episode hanging out with the people in the chat room. I would like to take a second and thank Carlos for being on the show. Where can we see your stuff this week, Carlos?
Hey, yeah, I'm on the Twitters, of course. Onawa, O-N-A-W-A. It's a Native American name. We just launched a new video game website called videogamebreak.net. Going old school with the .net. Or maybe new school, I don't know. They promote them now. So go to the website. And we have actually one of the features on the site was inspired by your March Madness. I thought cool. That thing was so cool. And you were doing the battling of the games. I created a page called Super Battle Page, where me and the community of the people on the site are adding all of the games ever. And
it's a lot of games.
And they're all, yeah, there are a lot of games. And we're going to have them all battle each other. Anybody can play it. So you just go to the site and you can
I got two words for you. Two words for you. Tetris.
Oh, I thought it was royalty checks.
That too.
I was going to go that way too. I'll give you a shout out on the thing. But yeah, Tetris, I think, was on the top 10. We take a snapshot every month. And then we're going to do something cool with that snapshot. I'm not sure yet, but last month, I think Tetris made it to the top 10 and then fell off. But I'm pretty happy with the top 10 in usual. So, yeah, so go check that site out. That's our new thing. And then I'm doing other projects, but just follow me on Twitter.
Very cool. Christian, what about you, sir?
If you're listening to this live and you're in L.A. tonight, I'm doing Rob Hubel and Paul Scheer's Crash Test at UCB at 11 p.m., if you're not listening live, dude, it was great. What a fun show. Rob and Paul are two of the best people and so busy and so amazing, and they're incredible. You should support everything they do. I do a stand-up comedy podcast on the Nerdist Network called What's New. The next, it's a live show, and then it goes out as a podcast. That is May 13th, I believe. Is that Tuesday coming up? And this Thursday, May 8th, is my show Improv versus Stand-Up. It is also at UCB. It's at 8 p.m. It's with an improv group called White Women. And then we have Sarah Tiana, who you might know from Reno 911, and JC Coakley, who has a new show coming out on MTV on that show, along with myself. It is awesome. I'm very proud of it. And
JC Coakley? I did a thing with her.
She's good people.
She's funny.
Yeah. Which is good because it's a comedy show. I want to do a shout out to Chris Bergman. Last week I talked about my inline skating days and we connected over Twitter. And he used to work for Daily Bread, which was the most amazing inline skating magazine. He actually sent me a link to a documentary about inline skating that really brought back the memories. I've been out of the scene for a while and it was really cool. So I really appreciate him sending that way, and it was great talking to him. It's easy to make fun of rollerblading, but man, I had so much fun doing it. And the kids and the adults that are still doing it now are incredible. And if you like action sports or whatever you want to call it, they're doing amazing stuff in that space. So maybe check it out.
Very cool. Very fun episode. Thanks everybody for calling in. Remember, if you want to call in, we record every show on Mondays, or every Monday each show or something like that. Grammatically correct. Mondays, 11 a.m. Pacific time. You can call in at 512-518-5714. Why not write that down and hang out with us someday? Mondays at 11 a.m. is when we record live. Thanks a lot for your kind reviews on iTunes. Those do mean a lot to us, and we appreciate it. You can check out my YouTube page for more reviews during the week for things that aren't just video games. I'm at youtube.com/KanataJeff. That's with two N's and one T. Also, follow me on Twitter, at Jeff Kanata. And that's going to do it for this week of DLC. We can't wait to be back next week as we ramp up for E3. There's going to be lots more to talk about. And we appreciate you hanging out with us. Until next time, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.